In this episode of the Music Bed Podcast, we sit down with director Leo Aguirre. He's represented by Stink Films and has worked with brands like Nike, Spotify, Converse, and Patron. He's also directed music videos for artists like James Blake and River Tiber.
But you also want to be the stupidest person in the room.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of like a philosophy that's been really important for me, is having everyone that's around you be way better at what they do than you. If I think that I'm the best person in the room, then I think the project's only going to be as good as me. And that's advice that I got from a friend a while back. He was like, you want to make sure that you're working with people that are going to like elevate the project way beyond any way that you thought you could elevate it yourself.
This podcast is a production of MusicBed, the standard in music licensing for film, TV, and advertising. To create your free account today, go to musicbed.com.
Thank you, dude, for being here. I've been, the last couple of weeks, I've been looking at all your work. I wasn't familiar with it, like, other than a couple spots, but I'm a huge fan of your stuff, man.
Thanks, man.
It feels like you have a very refined voice at this point. Do you feel that way?
I feel like I'm still, like, figuring that out, or, like, discovering kind of the things that I'm, like, gravitating towards.
How do you differentiate between what you show and... I don't want to call them money jobs, because I don't think you, especially you, I don't think you approach it like that. But like, what does that job or that project have to have or have to feel like for you to add it to your website or promote it yourself?
I've been more cognizant of it. And I think you become aware of it as well as you're growing, that there are projects that you want to do more of.
Yeah.
And you ideally share projects like that more.
Yeah.
As opposed to the ones that you don't want to do more of.
Were you ever stuck with doing a certain type of work for a while?
Yeah. I was, so before I started directing, I was editing a lot. I used to edit at an ad agency. So I was like editing a lot of like Popeyes chicken and like Southwest Airlines stuff. I was at GSD&M, and that was really a great learning experience. It was really cool to see kind of how it all worked from the inside. But I was doing that for a while before I could make the leap. And then... through like a series of things, there was like a spec that I'd done, and it just kind of dominoed. But I was doing a lot of editing work, and then in directing wise, yeah, there's, I think, you know, the docu style, the elevated docu style is always something people want to see. But I'm trying to move more into like scripted stuff now.
Yeah.
So working on like narrative stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. There is a ability to make a pretty good living at doing commercials. Sometimes it feels like it's hard to get out of that sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How do you sort of prioritize doing the shorts and passion projects and stuff like that?
I see any project as like an opportunity to practice the craft, really,
for sure.
You know, and sharpen it. And working with people who are also developing as well, I think is really important for me, because I think that it's really important to have this community around it. There are projects that you might not want to take because, you know, creatively they're not super fulfilling, but I think that you also have to see it as an opportunity to buy yourself time to work on the things that you want to work on sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of how I've been approaching it.
Yeah. Do you find it hard to say no to things though?
I think yes in every aspect of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a person that you'll bug me enough and convince me to go out even though I'm exhausted. I have a hard time saying no. I'm working on that. But yeah, job.
Where do you think that comes from though?
I'm like a people pleaser sometimes.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Do you have a fear of saying no out of like relevance?
Right. A friend of mine was telling me, he's like, he said, you know, we want to say no, but we also want to feel wanted. It's
yes.
Funny. Cause it's, and it's funny when you say, I'm going to take a break. And then you think, I haven't been asked to do a job for like a month or two.
Yeah.
But yeah, there have been periods, you know, when I first signed, there was a period where I didn't see any work for like 4 or 5 months. And it was kind of anxiety inducing, because I thought, you know, did I make the wrong choice? Am I at a company that's too big for me? And I think that that's something that I called other directors about, and they were like, yeah, sometimes you do send to a place where you're like a small fish, and you have to be very aware of that. And you have to think about where you sit in that roster. And for a while I thought, damn, you know, but also the reps, you know, they talk to you, and I voiced it early on, and they were like, you know, it takes a while to get going. You know, they have to pitch you to agencies, and it's a whole process.
Yeah.
At the time that I signed with Stink, I also didn't have like a ton of commercial work. So it was hard to get the first few projects under my belt.
What do you think the turning point with that relationship was, that where you started to see the work, like, was, mm-hmm. did some, was it one piece of work that you got to create, or was it just time? Like, what was the turning
point? I think it was time, and I think people becoming familiar with your reel, and also just reps, you know, making sure that they're pushing you and that they're selling you the right way.
How do you do that?
So those conversations look like basically talking about what kind of work or what kind of boards I've been seeing, you know, over the past 3 months or so, and then what kind of jobs you've done, and then saying, you know, do we want to do more of that? Not really. Yeah. What is it that you're trying to do more of? And I think that there's also, you have to understand, I guess, the frustrations that you might experience when you're in this field and industry, and especially in advertising, is you want to go do jobs that you don't have the reel for.
Yep. Which is smart. Very smart.
And I think that that is something that you have to be highly aware of.
So right now, are you going, you know, I want to be making movies. Can I get more dialogue spots?
Yeah. So I think right now I'm trying to lean more into like dialogue and more scripted stuff.
Yeah.
But
Which is hard when you're not a comedic director.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, I was up for this job recently that was, it was like dialogue driven, and it was like really simple, and it was comedic, but the way that we wanted to do it was just let it be more grounded and kind of dry.
Yeah.
And, I didn't get the job, but I thought, you know, like it was exciting for me to work on. I realized that I poured myself into it like way more than I would, you know, a job that's purely just like going to be visual.
Right.
I also am recognizing that I want to do those things, and I don't need to do those for anybody else. Like I can also, I have a short that I'm going to produce soon or to direct soon. And it's like, I want to go do that for myself where I don't have to deal with like notes and stuff like that.
Coming from Texas, did you grow up in Austin?
I grew up in El Paso. I spent like almost 8 years in Austin before moving here to New York. But I grew up in El Paso and Ciudad Juarez. I grew up on the border.
Is there parts of that that you bring into your work that you can recognize and analyze now?
I think that there's an aspect to every project, or at least the projects that might be more personal to me that deal with, I guess, a dimensionality of a character, maybe an identity, you know, like I think that that's one thing that I really care about. I think that there is a tendency to look at like the Mexican American experience in like a very one dimensional way in the advertising world. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. we want this, we want like a reggaeton track on it. We want this. So I think what I like is proposing, you know, okay, well, we have this, you know, subject matter, and it's been depicted in a very, you know, singular way. Yeah. Is there, you know, why can't we bring in something that is like orchestral for this and it not have anything to do with like reggaeton?
Yeah.
You know, so there are aspects in that regard that I think, are choices that can be made to bring something more, I guess, a bit more depth and depicting an identity or a people's culture in a different way.
You feel like you'll bring some of that experience into the feature world?
One that I'm developing now has a lot to do with kind of like my, I guess, coming to terms with my identity culturally. I think, growing up in Texas, there's a lot of layers to it, I think. And there's also a lot of layers to someone's, the way that they identify culturally. Mm-hmm. You know, you might have someone whose name is like Juan Perez and they don't speak any Spanish. And you're like, what? And it's interesting to me that there are so many things that can vary from person to person. And I think that in terms of like the narratives that I'm trying to explore, I don't want to make films that are just about the Mexican American experience, course, yeah. right? There's other things that I want to explore as well. But this first film that I'm writing now is about that and kind of the gradient of it.
This podcast is a production of MusicBed, the standard in music licensing for film, TV, and advertising. From indie artists on the rise to leading composers, MusicBed has curated the best roster of musicians for your films. Go to musicbed.com and use the promo code LEO to get your first month free on a standard subscription.
I also feel like your work doesn't need to be always a reflection of you. Like I feel like I'm a complete idiot with my friends sometimes, you know, and I'm
just like making fart jokes and
yeah, you're exactly. you don't have to always be a reflection of your work. And I think that there's things that you gravitate towards that might not be, you know, I've had weirdly like people approaching me like, your work's kind of dark. Like, are you like, okay? I'm like, I'm fine. There's just things that I like to, you know, there's themes that you like to explore in your work, and yeah. I don't think that it needs to be always a reflection of you. There's also things that I think I've made that are lighter, but Yeah, it's funny. I had a job recently that was for a client that was really, there was supposed to be like a lightness to it, but then the agency was like, oh, we want to make this really humanistic and da da. And basically they looked at my work and they were like, it's really dark. Like visually, it's like, there's a lot of dark imagery. And I was like, well, you know, there's like naturalism to it. You know, it's not like every room you walk into is like front lit and, and it was just walking this line, the whole job, which I'm sure you've had happen before, of like, is this too dark? And it's, it's a night scene. Someone they're like sitting in a living room and there's a practical lamp next to them. Like they're going to, it's not going to be a, you know,
it's also such a killer when you bring in an amazing DP
who knows
what they're doing and knows how to make things quote unquote dark, you know, but it's still there and you can, and then you get like over the radio, you get asked to brighten it up and you have to just look at the DP and decide how you're going to like, go over there and say like, they think it's too dark. When it's like, this is like, I'm sure you work with incredibly successful DPs who have done some of the biggest advertising or movies in the world. You know what I mean? And it's like, it still happens no matter what. It never fails.
Yeah. I had a job and I won't mention who was on it. It was a DP who I respect a lot. He's like one of my favorite like narrative DPs. And we were doing this, this piece and one of the talent was just like, she was a celebrity talent. It's just like, I don't like the way I'm being lit. It became like kind of like an hour long thing where it was like, well, like there was a treatment and this is kind of the look for the spot.
Yeah.
And you know, and everyone else is okay with it. Like every other celebrity this and this is like okay with it. So, and it, yeah. And then, but you have a DP that's like, you know, like world renowned, they're artists in their own right. And I think it's also your job as a director to kind of say like, hey, like, you know, I understand that you are contractually, or maybe not even contractually, but you like to be lit, you know, front lit with like, you know, specific diffusion and stuff. And
at certain degrees.
Degrees. And, but it's like, I think that those things need to be discussed beforehand because I think when you get that, you were just talking about your job, like
you get
thrown into
this. Well, that's the problem is you do discuss it. Like somebody mentioned it to them, like here's a lookbook.
Right.
And they decide to look at it or not, you know, but,
they agreed to do it.
They agreed, you know?
Yeah.
But you're totally right. Like, I mean, is there any tricks that you have to sort of negate some of those conversations that maybe come up? I do I do do one thing where...
You just brighten the monitors up?
Yeah, you just brighten the monitors a little bit. Whatever TVs they're using, just ask VTR to just...
Just crank it.
Crank it.
crank it. I mean, you know, the funny thing is that oftentimes, like, that information is always there and, like, it's you know... Nobody that's on that job is there to make this look bad.
Of course.
And and people are vetted for this reason. You know, you, usually you have agencies and clients or artists approve who's shooting it for a reason. And it's like, nobody's there to make this look bad.
Yeah.
I think it's just making sure that you're aligned on the way that this is going to look. And I'm usually very specific with treatments on how it's going to look.
Yeah.
And if there are qualms, then, you know, I'll even go further and make like a mood board and say like, hey, I'm just bringing this to your attention now because this is the look that we're going for.
Yeah.
Everyone's on board. Cool.
Yeah.
And then that point, it's like, we've talked about it. We know what it's going to look like. I think that that's a way to kind of ease everyone's mind.
Bring me through your sort of step-by-step. You get a brief in. Mm-hmm. What do you do first in the treatment process? Like kind of bring me through all the way your treatment process.
Well, first I like to ask them, you know, when you get on that call, on the agency call, you ask them like, well, what are you guys wanting to take away from it? Like, what's your goal with it? You've spent this amount of time with this project. And I usually like to, before that, because usually, you know, you get the brief before the call and... It also just jot ideas down just right off the bat that come to mind. And if there's flexibility for rewrites on certain things, because I think sometimes, you know, you're so in the advertising world and I've witnessed it from the inside is you see how decisions are being made at such a fast pace that sometimes the concept's becoming diluted.
Right.
Because they just want to get it done.
They just need to sell it through.
Right. Yeah. So I think that it's important to always... I like to come to the table with ideas as well and seeing if there's anything that they are open to. And sometimes they're like, the script is locked and like, that's that.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're like, we're open to a rewrite, and that's always fun. But I'll have the call, and then usually I'll take a few hours to like just listen to music. And then also just thinking about the first image, really, that's like a thing that I really care about, is what's the first thing that people are going to see when they see this spot? Because I think that we're so saturated with mm-hmm. like all the work that we see, you know, you're on YouTube and like every, you know, our job is to like take away 6 seconds of people's lives when they yeah. look up how to patch a hole in their wall on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
So you want
to make it sound so glorious.
Right, right. Sure. So you want to present something that's going to kind of be like a little bit of a, like, wait a second, like what am I looking at? Right. It's kind of like posing a question. I really like the idea of starting projects with an image that just like grabs you.
Yeah.
Cause I've been that person that's like, oh, this 6 second spot, like yeah. skip, you know? But then I have occasionally been the person that's like, wait, like, what is this?
Right.
Or, you know, sometimes there's like something that grabs you.
Can you identify what that is that grabs you?
Funny enough, it's for me, it's like a sound thing. Mm. It's silence or like diegetic sound when I'm not getting bombarded with music right off the bat. And that's something that I really,
such a good point.
Man. Something that I like talk to a lot about, like the agencies or talk to agencies a lot about, is like, we don't have to start with this like blaring music. Cause immediately people just like tune out. They're like, okay, commercial or like advertisement.
So, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Diegetic sound can just be more cinematic in some way.
Yeah. You know? I think that's actually coming back to it. Maybe that's something that I think I can recognize in all of my work, is like, I don't like to start with music.
That's such a good.
And yeah.
Such a good takeaway, dude.
Yeah.
For a lot of people.
Yeah. It's like, I think that hopefully advertising is seeing a little bit of an awakening in the sense that people are kind of over it.
Yeah.
You know, and like they want things that are real and that was the thing with the Red Wing spot as well, was the whole take on it was, you know, when you're watching a game on TV or something, and then Labor Day's coming up, you get like a JCPenney spot or like something. And it's like, yeah. This Labor Day, we're going to, this is the discount. So right. the team came to us and they were like, we want to just flip that on its head. And it's like just diegetic audio. And we're literally telling people that we're not on sale.
Yeah.
So they were like, one shot, and it's just completely silent and it's just immersive.
This Labor Day, expect no promotions, no discounts, no sales, no special deals at all. Just the same full-priced, high-quality boots.
And it stops you, because when you're, you know, even when I'm home and my grandparents are watching
yeah.
something on TV. Also, my grandpa watches like Telemundo.
Yeah.
And that's like the loudest advertising you'll ever hear. They like crank it up. So, but yeah, if you hear silence, you're like, wait, why is there no person like yelling on the TV? So I think it's nice to think about that when you're like that first image, and then also what you're experiencing those first few seconds of a spot. So I think about that a lot. I think about how it's going to open and how you're going to grab an audience, a viewer.
So when you start writing, where do you usually start?
Well, actually, so I like to co-write.
Really?
I like to co-write, yeah. Yeah.
You have like your person?
Yeah, I have a person that I like to go to really often. He's a screenwriter as well. So he's always challenging. You know, we'll get on a call and we'll like work through it together, and we both jam on it. I think it's important to have somebody that's like, that's cool, but like, what if you did that? Like, what if you flipped it and did this? And so I think that's one thing that I've, you know, a lot of people might kind of frown upon like having like a co-writer for a commercial. And there have been jobs that I've written from start to finish. It's also like a timeline thing, because sometimes he's not available and I have to just kind of like jam on something for 48 hours straight, not sleep.
And Stink's usually like paying for him to like punch up writing, or is he just doing it as a homie? Mm-hmm. Or?
So he's not punching it up as much as like we're both kind of writing on it. I usually do the punching up, which is funny. So we'll talk, we'll get on a call, and I'm like, hey, I think, you know, this is kind of what I'm thinking. What do you think about this? And I think it's kind of, for him and I, it's like we're just bouncing ideas back and forth.
Yeah.
And then we'll work on different sections together. Okay. Or I'll do one section, he'll do another, and then we'll kind of, you know, I'll go through it. And then he's like, hey, here's like what I was thinking. And then I usually have like a day before the layout is being done where I just kind of sit with it and I just go through the whole thing and I just kind of like add stuff and tweak and, and then there's someone obviously always helping with layout. You know, these treatments are like 80 pages sometimes.
Yeah.
So it's like so much work. I used to, when I first signed with Sync, I was doing it like all on my own.
Yeah.
And I was doing like from start to finish, treatment, layout, image sourcing, writing, everything. Yeah. And then they were like, you know, we can just help you if you want.
Yeah. And you're like, I didn't know that was an option.
What? Yeah. So yeah, I think it's important that you also realize that there are people that are there to help you have a more dialed vision. And
especially on your level, for sure. Mm-hmm, like using those resources is
it's
a game changer.
Yeah.
You have to use those resources. Who are some of you? Let's name some names. Who are some of your favorite DPs that you get to work with?
Okay.
Homies. Older ones.
Yeah.
Younger ones.
I love to work with, so I'm also one of my, he's one of my like best friends as well. His name's Daniel Niazi.
Okay.
Daniel Khan Niazi. He did like the River Tiber video. He's, he did the Red Wing spot as well.
Cool.
We've been able to work together and just like also, you know, we're such good friends that there's such a shorthand and we can like disagree about stuff and then we'll like fight a little bit, but it's like, but it's always in the spirit of, you know, of like making
something great.
Yeah. And we will watch movies, you know, he'll come over and I'm like, let's watch like Black Swan or something. And then we like end up watching like two movies or he's like, let's watch a Kiarostami movie. He's great. Steve McCord is like someone who I've worked with before, who did the US Cellular commercial that I mentioned to you. And he's an amazing person. He has like a really beautiful, way of looking at the world. And I think that, he's here in New York. They're both in New York. Diego, Garcia, he did the Patron piece with me. And then I think like that's someone whose work I've admired. He's worked with like a Pichit Pong, Veracetha Cool, and like, Nicholas Winning Refn and Lanthimos. And like, so I met him and I was like, you know, this guy, it'd be great if he'd be down to do this. And he did, we got on a call and he was really down to work on this job. And
what did he do with the Lanthimos?
He did a short called, Nimic, I think.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so wild.
Yeah. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
Bizarre. But
he worked with Refn as well.
Yeah. He did half of the, Too Old to Die Young series, I think it's called. And then I think Kanji did the other half. So like to think about like that echelon of DPs, you know, it's really, so I think, I worked with him and initially I was like, man, this guy's like such a badass. What's he doing like on this job with me? And then we just ended up becoming becoming really good friends and realizing that we were both into like very specific ambient artists from like Japan or techno and stuff like that. So then it become like a nice friendship that I've had with him. And so, there's Cole Graham. That's another guy who I love.
Yeah.
Cole's great. But I think that all of them have one thing in common. And I think that it is that they know when it's time to like dive in and like get into this flow and work, and collaborate. And they're all very collaborative people, you know?
But what do you go in with to a scene? You know, you've scouted it. People are coming off the truck. What are the things that you say first?
I usually try to be pretty dialed about what we're shooting. I like to storyboard pretty specific. So it's on the scouts. I bring my camera. They'll bring theirs. And like, we're both shooting frames and then we'll like talk about like what we're thinking about, essentially distilling everything that we've looked at independently. Mm-hmm. And then saying like, what is the best option? What is the frame that we like the most? And that's how I work with, with everyone. I think every DP, I've been very lucky and very fortunate to work with DPs that I've really enjoyed. But you also want to be the stupidest person in the room.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of like a philosophy thing that's been really important for me, is having everyone that's around you be way better at what they do than you. I could think that I'm a better DP, but I know that there are people that are way more talented than me at that. And if I'm if I think that I'm the best person in the room, then I think the project's only going to be as good as me. And that's advice that I got from a friend a while back. He was like, you want to make sure that you're working with people that are going to like elevate the project way beyond any way that you thought you could elevate it yourself. You know, if you're making every decision, you need people that are like, actually, I feel like this wallpaper is not going to work.
Yeah.
I think you should really think about this. And I think that that's been really, really great about working with even with production designers that are like pushing you in that regard and stuff.
Well, dude, let's talk about features real quick. How far away are you from diving into your first feature? Do you feel like?
Yeah, the goal is to have a full first draft of this by the end of next month. I feel good about where it's headed. I think that sometimes I've had some false starts with some ideas before, you know, and you kind of like, and then it's funny because I think that the gestation process is you kind of find something that you really like and that you want to explore. And then you kind of get like 20 pages in and then you're like,
this is a little thin.
Yeah. But then you come back to it and then you're like, oh wait, I figured out a way to get around it.
Dude, I think that almost should be almost like a mandatory thing where you like, I have a co-writer that I work with, and every single time we finish something, we put it away for like some things we put away for 6 months.
Yeah, come back to it. Yeah.
And then come back to it, and you're like, this is shit, but I know how to fix it. Yeah. Like, you just see it very clearly.
Yeah, you need space from it. Like, you need space from it. And I think that's when I'm learning. I usually try to go to like New York Film Festival screenings when they come down. And I went to go see After Sun, and the writer was talking, Charlotte Wells was talking about how she failed to write this movie for like years, you know? Yeah. And I think she said it was really important for her to fail to write this movie for a while, because you are also doing other things with your life. You're not just writing a movie, right? And it's really important to like procrastinate with other forms of expression, I think, like if you play music or like if you do other things. So I've been trying to be more forgiving about that. And I'm also not, it's really easy to like rush to like, I want to get this first feature done. Yeah. I want to get this first feature done. But I think that it is for me right now, cause it is a deeply personal story. Not so much so in like that it's something that happened to me, but because of where I grew up and because of, I guess, the subject matter, my mom works in an immigration center and she, you know, the story goes about basically it takes place over the summer in South Texas. And it's about a kid who's forced to share like a room with like a migrant child that they're fostering. And they're both the same age, but the main character is Mexican American. So you have this aspect of, you know, if you're first generation, your relationship with like your native country is maybe more detached than you think.
Yeah.
It's a lot to process because I think a lot of it I'm taking from like my family life from home. And my parents were very traditional. In the sense that they, you know, they didn't want me to do film, stuff like that. So there's things that I think I'm taking away. And I think it's hard. You're processing a lot. You're like almost kind of going through therapy when you're writing a lot of the time.
The most creative is the most personal, you know? I think that was Scorsese. I think that's what he said.
Yeah. I think it's nice. It's true, and then you take liberties, so right? You take liberties with like certain things. But I think that if you're feeling that it's personal to you, I think that it's sometimes easier. Sometimes it can be really hard.
Yeah. Especially if you don't want to be personal in something, but it kind of forces you to.
Yeah.
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 Totally, man.
It's a mirror.
Yeah. I love being reminded with certain films that it has a creator behind it. I love films that you can see the making of it. You know what I mean? For someone like me, like when I feel, you know, someone's energy in the movie, I connect with it so much harder, you know, but those are my favorite movies.
Yeah. What's something you've seen lately that you've been like, damn, like that was really good.
Just in probably the last year or two, this movie called Hannah with Charlotte Rampling has like really kind of devastated me and kind of like,
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Also, I thought Triangle of Sadness was very, very good. But I have certain movies that I would rewatch to like capture that again.
Yeah. You know, which ones do you rewatch when you're
Itu Mama Tembien?
Oh man, I have a poster of Itu Mama Tembien in my bedroom. That's a great fucking movie. Yeah.
And like Beautiful, Iñárritu's Beautiful. Yeah. Sin Nombre is like another one.
Sin Nombre is great. Yeah. That's Cary Fukunaga's like first. I think.
Yeah.
Have you seen the short Victoria Parachino? The first.
It was
one?
Before that. No, but I did. I always when I watch Sin Nombre, I'm like, this is an impossible movie to make.
Yeah.
On top of a train, physically moving.
Yeah.
It's not like some tricks.
They did some stuff with like some semi trailers
that they're pulling.
They're pulling. They like, yeah.
It looks like it's going so fast, though, sometimes.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I think Prisoners is another one of those. Like, Denny, there's Aronofsky, there's Denny, there's, you know, there's just, like, this canon of, that I feel like, Darren Aronofsky, I mean, not Darren, Darren C. in France and stuff. Like, there's people that I just feel like, these are my people, like, Steve McQueen, you know. But they tend to be more serious movies, you know, there's a lot of, like, them in it, you know, these people who are able to put themselves into every scene and, you know, it's magic, dude.
Yeah.
I get obsessed. I am obsessed with it. Yeah. I'm sure you are too.
Yeah. No, those are all like in the canon for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are yours?
I think Y Tu Mamá También is like such a powerful.
You say it much better than I do.
I think Cuarón and Iñárritu are, you know, they're great. It's funny because I like learned recently that they like also came, they did a lot of advertising before they made movies.
Yeah. And Cuarón like had a production company in Mexico City, right?
Yeah, I think Iñárritu was like the head of an agency for a while. He was working at like a radio host and like an agency for a while, and then it was like, all right.
It's funny how those histories kind of disappear from the lore, you know? I don't know how they cover that stuff up to like...
You see their commercials. Their commercials are great. They have some cool commercials. I mean, Iñárritu's commercials are insane.
Yeah.
I think that's another thing is reminding yourself that people like Derek Cianfrance also do commercials and like seeing their... Yeah. You know, you gotta eat. And I think that for a long time, I was very, like, I had friends that were like, oh, you can't, like, you're selling out to the commercial world. And it's like, well, I mean, it's not really selling out. It's kind of buying yourself a little bit of time. And I mean, you're buying yourself time. I heard Ian Ponsdoel talk about this actually, like on a podcast, like a few years ago. And it was like, you have to be like time rich. You know, you have to like have a lifestyle where you're not, you know, you could go do commercials and then buy yourself a like, super months, expensive car.
Yeah.
And then you're like, now I have to sustain this lifestyle where I'm living very lavishly. Or you can say, I'm going to have a very low overhead and like try to just give myself as much time as I can to work on the things that I want to work on.
Yeah.
And I think that that's very important to remember. And, you know, you can say, I'm not going to do commercials and, you know, you can be a purist about it. And I respect that as well. But I think it is an opportunity to work with people that you might otherwise not get a chance to work with. And also just to hone the craft, you know, it's a craft at the end of the day that you have to like sharpen.
Yeah.
I think
that's always what I try to tell people who are like, I can't do freelance. Like freelance is scary. I got, you know, kids or I have this, I have that. Like it's very similar to what Ian says in terms of the time where like, how much do you need a month? And then figure out a way to get, all you need really is like, how much do you need? You need 3 months of time because you'll get another job within that 3 months. Right. If you get, all you need is one job to buy yourself this amount of time to get ahead and then a little bit more ahead and then a little bit more ahead. And it's like less daunting that way when you think about it, but it's just, all you really need is just one opportunity that you could create for yourself. You know what I mean?
It's a balance, you know? Yeah. I did a lot of couch surfing for a while in New York and LA. And you're like, it's not easy. I think that's one thing that it's like, it's definitely, a career that can take a toll on you. I think for sure. But I think it's like, if you love it, if you're doing it for the right reasons, you're going to love it. Right. Like if you're just doing it for like fame, then I don't think that you should do it. But I think
there's other outlets for that.
There's other outlets.
There's TikTok.
There's TikTok. Yeah. but if you're doing it because you love it and it's what you want to do with your life, then you'll do it. There's no question about it.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I see that in your work and I see that with you just the way you talk, man. So
thanks, man.
You've inspired me today. I hope you inspire other people through this. And
thank you.
Thanks for coming, dude.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
In the next episode of the MusicBed podcast, we sit down with director Young Replicant, aka Alex Takis. Known for his high concepts and visual poetry, he's directed music videos for artists like Lord, Alt-J, and Flying Lotus. He's also worked with brands like Sprite and Adidas.
And I'm in this like sort of strange stage where like cocky 18 to 25 year old is gone, but you know, the wise man hasn't arrived yet. You just have like a confidence that slowly gets replaced by technique. There's that sort of first blush. It's all intuitive. It's all this just raw, instinctive working. If you're lucky enough to have success with that, then you spend the next 10 years trying to codify those instincts into a technique. because you want to repeat that.
This podcast is a production of MusicBed, the standard of music licensing for film, TV, and advertising. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with another filmmaker you know, and subscribe to be notified for the next episodes.